Welcome to the Wide World of Punting, episode 4 of season 2, where we're going deeper than we've ever gone before. I'm Jacob Wynn from the Tripod. I've got the Wide World Bet of the Week, which incorporates Formula 1 and UFC, to share at the end of this pod. But for the full hour, we're going to be chatting with our friend Tristan Merlihan, CEO of Top Sport, who sponsors this show, of course, all about scandals and shady business. So, as you probably know, betting is a multi-billion dollar industry worldwide, and anytime there's that much money involved, there's going to be people that are trying to get an advantage. Don't get me wrong, if you follow the Tripod, you'll know I'm all about trying to find that edge. But today we're chatting all about crossing that line where we're talking match fixing, spot fixing, point shaving, leaked information, cheating, disqualification, suspicious betting. And Tristan shares a bunch of his own first-hand experiences dealing with all of these as a bookie. You know, no doubt many of you guys are NRL fans, and there have been several examples involving the NRL, and we discuss what took place there. Cricket examples, talk tennis, a sport that's quite well known to have been highly impacted by match fixing over the years. College basketball with point shaving, the NBA scandal with officiating, AFL racing, we talk soccer, whether it be from amateur leagues all the way through to the World Cup itself. And Tristan also explains how certain markets that used to be offered and have changed, or how rules around resultings have changed as a result of a lot of the issues that we're going to discuss through this chat. So I hope you enjoy it. From your perspective, you know, running a bookmaker where you know, people are risking real money, and there's real money at stake on both sides depending on a result, I thought it'd be especially interesting to discuss with yourself, Tristan. So I thought the first question I'd ask would be, can you give us an example of what you guys are looking for, or what would trigger as being a sort of suspicious betting pattern where you think something nefarious might be going on?
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting one, Jacob, as you say. Like there's been a few obviously prominent situations brought forward in over the years, and I guess from our point of view, what we're looking at is it's just anything irregular, and whether that means, you know, sometimes it might not be match fixing, it just could be that the market's wrong, but it's trying to then sort of understand why a bet's coming from a particular customer. So it might be a new customer that you don't know a lot about, or it might be someone that's betting out of the ordinary, or a known sort of professional, it might be overstaking and these sort of things. And it's not necessarily the case of that first bet or the second bet that you lay, because it's very hard to sort of pick up on that. But it's once you move the market price to something that, you know, whenever basically we move a market price, we're sort of saying, what should the next bet be in this situation? And when, you know, you go from a line $1.90 pick'em, and you might say, okay, well, I'm happy to take another bet on the minus here. So I might only move the line from 180 to 185, 195 or something like that. Or if you're really trying to get out of the road, you might go $1.80, $2. And then it's when you lay that secondary bet, the $1.80, you say, well, why am I laying this bet now? What's going on here? And then you might move the price again harder. And then when the money continues to come for options that just don't seem to smell right, they're the things that you sort of look at, because, you know, as I said, like you might get right out of the road. You might go from a $1.90 to a $1.80 to a $1.70 to a $1.60, and when there's no player movements or there's nothing that's obvious that $1.90 was wrong in the first place, they're the ones that always sort of, I suppose, raise our suspicion and things we look at a little bit closer.
I always say as well, for punters, it's like one really important element when you're having a bet is, like, you're betting because you think the odds are in your favor, but it's quite important to understand why you feel that way. Like, why you think, basically, you think as a bettor, you think the bookies must have the price slightly wrong. And if the reason is, well, because you think that just in general, they've got a certain team overrated or underrated, then that's fair enough. And that's where, you know, you back your opinion. But you guys equally are holding an opinion. And that's where, if you're seeing that money coming in, but you can't quite understand why, I guess that's going to be a red flag.
You know, you somehow smell a rat, and then you're watching a situation more closely. And it's when something then happens that is not what you would expect in that game that you think, oh, like it either confirms your original suspicion, or, you know, you say, oh, it was a false alarm, or there was another reason, or the money came because this player's hurt, or such and such like that. So, and from our point of view, like we're never one that, you know, we don't ever sort of try to throw people under the bus. But by the same token, you want the integrity of the sport to be paramount, because at the end of the day, it's not just that one person having the bet, and you're doing the wrong thing by a lot of people if you're not alerting the authorities to something. So I think the industry's evolved so much over the last few years in particular, since we've been since the product fees and the integrity agreements have come in. So I know we've spoken in depth about how the fees are structured on the racing side of things, but they have come in on the sporting front as well. And it's actually termed as an integrity agreement because a lot of the funds are going into uphold the integrity of the sport. Because at the end of the day, in order for us to take strong bets, we need to be comfortable that the events are 100% legitimate. The punters need to be 100% convinced, because the last thing you want to, as a spectator, is to be saying, oh, something's fishy here or something's wrong. Because even for people not having a bet, it'll cause people to turn off the channel. So basically, whenever there is something that looks a little bit suspicious, there's official channels that, you know, particularly in Australia, that you will go down and you will, you know, raise your concern with the powers that be. They'll look at the ledger, they'll look through the notes. We get a lot of inquiries all the time, really, from different sporting agencies, different racing agencies, wanting to look at our ledger, and under our agreements that we sign, we have to provide that to them, which we're very happy to do. As I said, we want to make sure that the integrity of the sport is paramount at all times. And yeah, from our point of view, if ever we sort of suspect something, then yeah, we will certainly at least talk to a few of the other bookmakers, see if they've had similar experiences, and then it will generally go up the chain from there.
Integrity is such a key word, and I'd love to hear some more examples about that kind of communication channel. I imagine it can go both ways. You, as you say, you see something that you think's dodgy on your end, you could maybe inquire to the body that runs that sport, like, was this all above board, or did you guys see anything suspicious? But you, as you just referred to, it could go the other way, where somebody governing a sport is suspicious about what went on in a certain event, and so they actually have the ability to reach out to you and ask about, you know, the betting activities. It's funny because, you know, integrity goes hand in hand with kind of perception as well, and perception of fans and punters. And I don't know how many people out there really believe that a lot of sport is fixed, because I hear a lot of people say all the time, oh, this is fixed, or it's all fixed and stuff. I don't, like, a lot of people say that. I don't know how many believe it. But the interesting thing for me with integrity is there's an argument out there by some people that the more betting is involved in sport, the more corrupt, or the more opportunity there will be for, you know, people to fix results, and the more incentive for people to do that. But the counter argument is that if you're working with the authorities, it actually can increase the degree of integrity, because it's all registered, it's all recorded, every single kind of dollar that's placed. Can you give me examples? Maybe it was or it wasn't dodgy in the end, but examples where you kind of did investigate something that happened in an event?
Yeah, well, the a couple of things to touch on there, because like one of my bugbears is when people say, oh, this is fixed or that's fixed, and you know, you know full well, knowing all of the information that they're not privy to, that it wasn't the case. And I think in my view there, particularly in Australia, we've got to a point now where the integrity is at its highest I've ever seen, because of the fact that the vast majority of all the action is being placed in Australia with licensed bookmakers. Because, and it was something that I've been quite vocal with a number of the different sporting agencies, that, you know, they were concerned about a number of the different derivative markets that you can offer and the perception that might cause. But the reality is like when someone misses a kick from right in front, oh, you know, he's back the under 3.5 goals or whatever the case is, it's that conversation piece. But I think what people don't realize is that the limits on those markets in the regulated space is so small compared to the overall it's a spot fixing discussion compared to the match fixing. And from our point of view, like, the more markets you can offer and the more integral you can have, you know, if someone is going out of their way to do the wrong thing, they're going to be caught, because you do have that two-way communication channel, and I think that's important. So one that sort of went both ways, I guess, was the probably 10 years ago. It was an international tennis game, and I'm struggling to remember the players involved, but I remember we laid a quite sizable bet. A customer jumped on 5 or 10 minutes before the game, and he had a really significant bet on this player, and it was $1.80. The whole marketplace was $1.80, $1.85, and you know, we bet him to the normal limit we take, and we shortened it up, and he came again, and then the market was collapsing 5 minutes out. And you know, a tennis game is sometimes, oh, maybe the player's hurt, or maybe there's something else to it. And then we handled the bet, and the market just collapsed all around the nation. So I was sort of, and around the world. So I was monitoring this game, and the player that the customer backed actually lost the first set 6-3. So I was thinking, oh, well, we're in a decent spot here, because we were standing the match for more than we were comfortable with. But the funny thing was, the player that lost the first set shortened from $1.60 into $1.35 after losing that first set. And then he went down another break in the second set and he continued to firm. And I was just looking, and this it was the most red hot game I've ever seen in my life. But because there was no integrity channels to go to with the ATP, it was an overseas event. You know, there was nothing you could do. And then and the player ended up coming back and winning 6-3, 6-love or something in the third. And it was one of those ones where the combination of seeing the bets placed and also the magnitude of the betting moves in play were really stark. And I think the ATP ended up taking action against the player, which was good to see. But, you know, from our point of view, we had to honour the bet. It wasn't until many years after the fact that it all came to light. So that was one of the scenarios. The one on the opposite, which is a really positive situation.
Can you go into that one a little bit more, whatever you can remember? So, like, it wasn't a grand slam, but it was, like, we're talking ATP. We're not talking some, like, minor tournament. Are we talking, like, kind of top 100?
It was, and you know, I can't remember the exact match in question, but it wasn't a challenge. Yep. It wasn't an ITF. It was an ATP. Like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night over in Germany or somewhere in that sort of space. And yeah, that was, you know, when we were only just sort of starting out, it was one of those ones that, you know, you looked at it and you could just, I got that sick feeling in my stomach because I knew we'd taken a bet thinking we'd be able to manage it, and the market disappeared, and then the secondary bet that we end up having to absorb it, we were standing for three times our normal limit. And when, you know, when you're watching it and you think you're in a good space, and then the market just sort of completely turns and it's doing things. And yeah, it was a top quality game, and it got moved on by the regulators a couple of years later. So it was a really interesting.
So a couple of years later, it was found out to be that player threw the match basically.
Yeah, basically.
But he won the first set, but then he threw the match.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it was disappointing to sort of see that because the reality that you've got to look at as well is from a bookmaker's point of view, obviously we're disappointed that we've lost the amount, but it's the punters that are on the other side, the punters that are genuine.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well.
And from our point of view, we weren't at that point taking a lot of action, but I can only imagine the in-play activity on that. When you're seeing a player that's up to set and a break and he's at sort of $4 or $5 to win the match, and you know, alarm bells just have to be going off at that point. So I think that's where the industry has changed, that now that you know what you're looking for, and there's so many more people onto this. Like, I can only imagine if this occurred now, that Twitter would be going into meltdown or some of those social media pages, because it was so obvious in retrospect. And it's just the whole psyche of things have changed. The other one that was on the flip side, and why I was sort of alluding to the two points, was there was actually a situation there in the NRL which was quite well publicised with the Bulldogs and the Cowboys playing a game, and these two teams were at the bottom of the ladder. And I think it was right near the end of the season, and there was, you know, 15th versus 16th or 14th versus 16th, and the game meant nothing. And there was a big betting plunge for the Bulldogs to be the first, for the Cowboys to kick the first penalty goal. And
for the first scoring play to be a Cowboys penalty goal.
Yes, first scoring play to be a Cowboys penalty goal. And, you know, as soon as those bets rolled through to me, I was looking at them, and you know, it was just the smell was off to begin with, because why would a team in a meaningless game take a penalty goal to begin with? It made no sense. So we had just our algorithm that had it priced at $13 or whatever it was. So we just spent a nominal sort of figure, shortened the price up, and then, you know, the bets continue to come from $13 into $6, and that was the real stark warning sign for me. I was like, there's something completely wrong here. So now we preempted that move, and we were just trying to sort of get out of the road. We didn't want to take much activity on the game on that betting option because of the fact that it just didn't look right. And you know, I'm sure people will remember the situation where Ryan Tandy lay on the Cowboys player and gave away a penalty right in front. And Anthony Watson,
I actually believe just before that he had the ball and dropped it. So correct. First he dropped it in possession to give Cowboys the ball. Then he lay in the tackle to give the penalty.
Penalty away. And then, you know, the Cowboys took the quick tap, which is rightly so. They should have done that. But it got spread out wide and they scored in the corner. So what you know, you still question it. And obviously, to me, that was a genuine attempt. And I think all that came out. And obviously, your Aunt Tandy got stood down from football, and it was a losing betting fix in essence. And there was a lot spoken about it. We had to provide all of our records and all the bets that were taken. So it was a really interesting one. But just the way the officers got onto that case really quickly, even though it proved to be unsuccessful, I think was important because, you know, you can only imagine that if it went unnoticed, even though the bet ended up losing, you know, there could be a bigger scenario that popped up down the line. So that was, the question asked then is was there anyone on the other side that was meant to take that or meant to be involved in taking the two? And you never know. But, it was one that I still scratch my head at because it was just the circumstance of it was so obvious. Like if it was a state of origin game, and obviously that would never happen in that sort of level, you can imagine laying bets on a first penalty goal as a first scoring play because it's a tight expected game. But in a situation like that, it just made no sense. So to answer your question, you're just looking at it from the word go, saying there is something up here. I need to be mindful of this. And to their credit, the integrity officers were on it on Monday. I think there was so much said of it, and it was a really sort of silly one to try. But it's evolved. And I think in terms of where we talk about match fixing and spot fixing, I think that the biggest key element, I know there's been some Pakistani cricketers that Muhammad Amir that got in trouble for some spot fixing there a number of years ago. And I think the importance and what I stress to all of the sporting bodies when I talk to them is that the more you can legalise and open these markets up for the ledger, like the regulated environment, the easier you can sort of get rid of the bad eggs out of the sport, because a lot of the activity on cricket, for example, goes to the underground bookmakers in India and of the black market people where you've got no recourse. And I think it's important to try to keep the money in a regulated space to have all the markets in a regulated manner, because, you know, like even if that penalty goal came off in the Canterbury game, we could preempt what was happening. We didn't take significant bets because it looked so fishy. And I think that's the case. Like, people always talk about someone bowling a wide eye, you know, it's a fix or whatever the case is. But there's no bookie in his right mind that's going to take a really sizable wager on an instance like that in the regulated market, in my opinion. So I think sometimes it gets played up a little bit. There are certainly a lot of instances where it doesn't and it can slip through the cracks. But I think that's more in the mainstream markets. And sometimes it's situational as well.
Yeah, that example that you gave would be familiar to a lot of listeners, especially because we've got, you know, an NRL fan base kind of audience. And I think about that fix in particular, like I can see maybe why they thought it was the perfect crime. Firstly, you're picking in a kind of innocuous market. It's very long odds. So if you can just get a bunch of, you know, decent sized bets around, and from memory, because it was all on the news and stuff, people were walking into tabs and placing cash bets and stuff. So there was, in theory, no real personal records of who were getting these bets on. But that's really interesting that you yourself actually recall it and know that people were betting on their accounts, because obviously that was going to be tracked to them. And those people that were having those bets, you know, most likely had to be in the know. You know, obviously once they'd set this up, they would have got word around for people to get the money on. But in theory, like if I had been watching that game, you know, there's no way on earth I would have ever thought anything suspicious happened. Like a forward spills a ball, you know, 20 out from his own goal line, and then a tackle or two later, he's laying in the ruck a bit too long and he gives away a penalty. And then, as you say, the Cowboys didn't kick the two, but whether they had or whether they'd spread it wide and scored either way, like nobody who didn't know anything, had any reason to suspect anything, would have blinked an eye. But when you combine watching that with the knowledge that there was so much irregular money in a market that would usually be for recreational punters to have $5 or $10 or whatever on who's going to score the first try, or even if you are going to pick a team for penalty goal, it's like a bit of fun. It's not like a sharp play. So these are probably the biggest bets you've ever seen people try and have on that particular market. And that's what would have raised suspicion. So when you combine the two, that's what you're talking about, where because you're knowledge sharing and you could share with other bookies and you could share, you know, with the NRL, the betting activity, then when you watch it back, it is pretty obvious. And then obviously they would have like at least had their suspicions and they investigated and they found that there definitely was wrongdoing. And you mentioned, you know, yeah, if it's not regulated, it actually could be less legitimate. That's a bit of a debate that's been going on in the US. Obviously, college sport in particular is massive in the US and the athletes essentially are amateur. So there's been a big concern because sports betting really hasn't been legalized across the US, although it's becoming more widespread now. But from what I've heard is that one of the big arguments was like, it's going to fully corrupt all of the college sports if people can bet on it, because it's going to, you know, it's going to, because these kids that play are going to have money thrown at them to affect certain results. But the thing is, there already are a lot of people betting, whether it be offshore or betting, I guess, illegally or with unregistered bookmakers. So there already were. In fact, there's a documentary on Netflix that came out in the last few months, which kind of ties into our discussion called Bad Sport. And there's the one on the point shaving, which we can talk about what that is. And that occurred like in the 1990s in college basketball. So it actually, by legalizing wagering, it can actually make the sports have a higher degree of integrity because every, you know, or a much higher degree of the amount of volume of money that's bet is bet legitimately.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's an interesting one where, you know, with us, for example, in that Bulldogs game where we didn't take a significant amount in terms of true dollars, but we could see the movement and a lot of the other bookmakers would have seen the movement as well. And I'm not for a second saying that the people that backed it with us were actually in on the fix. And I think that's an important distinction because sometimes you can back something because you see a market moving or someone asks you, can you put a bet on for me here? Have you got a Top Sport account? And so that's a tricky thing from a regulator to try to understand, you know, who's actually involved. But when the importance of having the money in a regulated space, even though a lot of the guys probably doing the wrong thing are going to try to be smart enough to stay off the radar and go into a tab and bet cash, or in America go to an SP down at the pub. They get greedy and they end up trying to get more on, and they say, oh, the odds are still $13 here at Top Sport, or they're $14 at Sportsbet. Let's try and get something on there. And they, oh, it's only a couple hundred dollars that no one's gonna twig. But then when you put that in with the overall picture, it's amazing how then, you know, everything starts to make sense. Because as you said, like if you're just watching that game, you wouldn't have necessarily thought anything was up in that situation. But when you, even it not being on our side of the fence and knowing the bets that are coming, if you see a market, and in the day and age where things are being talked about, if you see a market go from $11 into $5 and then something like that happens, then a lot more people are onto it, particularly if, you know, like where you say was the biggest bets we've ever taken on something like that. We had customers that had models that were pretty, you know, taking teams that they felt, you know, were more likely to kick penalty goals or whatever. And we'd take some sort of sharp action on those sort of things, more so when we got the market priced up wrong. So we did have some sort of sense.
And imagine if a rain rolled in or something, like I can understand there would be legitimate reasons why someone could bet that. But, you know, you could have looked at those customers and seen, have they ever bet like first points before, or have they ever backed the penalty goal? You know, and that's where you talk about betting behavior. It's like, what was, had that person ever bet rugby league before? You know, because if they hadn't, it's even more sus.
Yep. Yeah, no, and it was funny. I still remember actually weeks after all the news started to break, the people involved were actually then backing penalty goals on subsequent games, I guess, trying to sort of mask their activity to make it look like they were, which you just shook your head. It was like, well, this is, you know, even though the bet lost, so it was, it has evolved and has changed, and I think it's a positive thing. And I think, as you say, the regulated environment is so important.
Well, love to hear more, you know, examples. We'll go through a few, but what about just the other side of the coin then? So we'll talk about, protecting punters, because even in that example, if you were to, you know, significantly drop the odds of a penalty goal, you'd probably be winding out, you know, the odds of other scoring options. And to people who are not in the know whatsoever, and you go back to that tennis example, well, they're just seeing value and they're seeing something that's too good to be true. Go back to the tennis example where they saw a bloke who's up a set and up a break, but paying $4 in the second set, they're probably thinking you guys have made a mistake, and they're likely to bet bigger on an event that's, you know, almost has no chance of winning because there is a fix involved. So can you give us any examples where customers have actually reached out to you and said, hey, like, cause they lost their bet or whatever, I reckon, you know, this was dodgy, like this was dubious, whether they were right? Or do you get some ones as well where people complain and tell you something was fixed, and they may be just talking out of their wallet, and you know, look into it and there's really nothing much into it?
Yeah, and I think that's the common one, you know, and that's what as I touched on a while back, it does irk me that, oh, this has been fixed, because it's probably not the case more often than not. But yeah, you get someone, oh, that match was fixed, I bet the other side can have a refund. And, you know, we pay on the official result, and obviously, you know, we have to do that under our policy. But I think one of the things that have come in now, like there was an example there, of a race where actually a horse weighed in light, and that's another way of, in essence, cheating. Where, you know, I think it was a pretty genuine sort of mistake more than a cheating sort of offense. But a horse basically weighed in light, won the race, and you know, all the customers lost their money, even though they backed the winner, which we had to end up paying on the horse that ran second.
Was this back in the day before? Like nowadays, you seem to all do the protest payout, yes. But was this before that?
Well, no, this was this year. This was a recent sort of scenario, and the protest payout covers protests. A DQ is a different sort of scenario.
Oh, okay, so, I'm with you. Yeah, so and the light horse won, and yes. did it win at good odds or?
Oh, it was a favourite.
And did you have a lot of people backing it?
Yeah, we had a lot of people backing it. And the difference between a protest and a DQ is that when someone loses on a protest, their horse could have won, and they could have been paid out. But the jockey's, you know, obviously done something, and there's been a protest and all that. With difference with a DQ is that that horse was never ever a chance of being paid as a winner from the moment they left the gates, because the horse was never going to be weighed in correctly when it got into the winner's circle. So it's a big difference there, and it's something that we ended up doing the right thing and paying out and doing a fair pay sort of play out. So I think that's probably how the industry's evolved, where now there is a lot more of this. So you do take it on a case by case scenario. If there is some genuine sort of gripes and it does look like, you know, the right thing to do would be to pay out, we certainly do. And you look at it from like a Melbourne Storm scenario when they won the comp, and then many years later the salary cap situation occurs, obviously them being one of the favoured runners in a lot of those premierships, there were a lot of people on them, we've paid them, they've collected, and good luck to them. But you know, people can come to you down the line, oh, back to whoever ran second in those years, I should have been paid. So I think they're different sort of scenarios. Like you just have to weigh it on face value, and if something just looks terribly off, then it's a sort of different feel to it. Like whereas that Melbourne salary cap sort of scenario, I think, you know, it's a different scenario. Someone caught cheating there and on a financial side of things, as opposed to someone actually going out there, like in that tennis game, never ever being in the match to win it, and punters, as you say, jumping into what they perceive to be value, which turned out not to be the case at all.
Yeah, cheating is kind of another one as well, which there's lots of kind of famous examples and we can touch on too. So can you think of any examples where a result was ever kind of overturned, but soon afterwards, but you would have already paid out on one side? And then what do? You kind of get stuck in a situation where you feel obliged to pay both sides, or then do you have to go back and say, to the people that won, but, you know, whatever, their team won by mistake, or the team was found to be cheating, or whatever, you know, whatever example it is. Have you ever had a scenario like that?
Yeah, well, you do get them occasionally, and you know, first things first, if you paid someone and if the result stays official, then there's nothing you can do. Then that's when probably the goodwill payer will come in. It's funny, Dad was actually telling me a story a while back actually, where he's been a bookie on course for many years, and he actually pioneered horse racing betting on the Gold Coast in South Australia. So basically, back in the day, it was very rare for bookmakers to actually bet on the South Australian races unless you're at the Adelaide track. So he had people flying in from all over the country to bet with him on this day, and he laid this horse to the owners actually, and they had $10,000 on the horse at $8. And this was 30 years ago, so it was a very, very sizable bet. And anyway, the horse flashed home, and it just got bobbed, it missed by a neck. And anyway, Dad's thing, you know, we got the cash here, and then the person putting the numbers in the frame actually put the incorrect number in, and he put the number of the horse that ran second, and they declared correct weight. So Dad had to pay out on the horse that didn't win, and then as a goodwill gesture had to pay out on the horse that technically won the race as well. So, you know, there was no cheating involved. It was an innocent mistake. And I guess that's where you touched on, is it a mistake, is it cheating? And it's a different side of the coin you got to sit on. But yeah, it's a tricky one to sort of, like, you just got to sit down, you got to logically think through the scenarios, you got to think what's the right thing to do here. Like, we're very fair in everything we do, and you just got to say, well, you know, is the right thing to do a justice payout here, or knowing the fact that you've already paid out these other customers, there's nothing you can do in that space.
Can you recall any other examples of, you know, suspicious betting patterns that led to real world examples of some form of a cheating or fix or inside information?
Yeah, well, it's a funny one. There's a couple of scenarios you look at in terms of soccer, and the difference is people saying it's a fix or is it gameplay? And sometimes, when a team has to play at a draw to get into into the next round in a soccer playoff. Is that a fix or is it gameplay? You know, like, are you going to blow the whistle on that? Is that the smart thing to do? And they're the things. So I've seen many instances in World Cup games or in those sort of things where the draw is incredibly short. So it's factored into the betting. And I guess that's a tricky one. If someone scores a goal and then someone goes down the other end and scores another goal 2 minutes later, then there probably is a bit of ill feel about that. Whereas if they're playing a very defensive game and it sits on nil all, it's a completely different scenario. So they're the things. That the one that I sort of always go back to is the betting plunge that involved Newcastle when Joey Johns hurt his neck and he was withdrawn from the side against the Warriors. This was many, many years ago. And it was one of the biggest plunges I've seen. I think they went from 440 into close to favourites. And Joey hurt his neck and he was still officially in the side. And this money just kept coming for the Warriors. And this was back in the day when all the bookmakers were taking very sizable bets early in the week, much, much more than what they are now. And I know we were laying them, 5,000 here, 10,000 here, and we were trying to manage our position, but the market just kept moving. And then, later on in the piece, you hear that Joey's out and that's the reason for it. So obviously some information got leaked in that sense. We never know where it came from or how it all unfolded, but that was one where it wasn't a case the match was fixed by any means. It was just a player that's so instrumental was withdrawing from the side and the marketplace had the match priced up in a case that assumed he was playing. So I think that's one of the things in rugby league in particular we've got a much better handle on now and something that I think from both sides of the fence, it's a great scenario. Like a lot of people would have had the Knights in their multis at the $1.20 odd or whatever they were, assuming he was playing. So as much as, I'm not trying to say that, it was bad for us that we've laid it all the way in, it's also bad for those punters that have taken the $1.20 shots that in theory they should have got $2 or $2.50 in their leg. And so now that the teams have to be announced, the squads have to be announced, if you know that, like on Tuesday night, if Joey's in some doubt, there's a backup halfback sitting there on the bench and you can read two and two and you can make your own assumptions. And there's so much more information available now on Twitter, on social media, and news breaks a lot quicker. So I guess that's one of the real-life examples of one of the really big moves we've seen. And then some of the other ones, you see some of the smaller leagues where, again, that's a tricky scenario, trying to work out if you've just got the market wrong or if there's something foul at play. And I've seen, many of the Chinese soccer leagues where we know very minimal amount of where the draw might have gone from 360 into nothing, or a team's gone from 250 into nothing. And you sort of look at that, you say, well, are there players out? I don't know enough about this league to make a call on it. Or is there something dodgy going on? And it's very difficult when these events happen overseas because you don't have any access to the governing bodies. And that's why I think it's so important and so good in Australia that everything is very, there are a lot of channels that you can go down if you need to raise something.
Yeah, regarding the soccer, like pretty much there's never odds for a soccer game where the draw is favourite. Like no matter what, like even if two equal teams play each other, the odds for a draw is pretty much $3 or above. And that's obviously historically proven to be, roughly correct. But I know what you're talking about because I have seen examples, even literally in a World Cup match, where the third group game, it's beneficial to both sides to draw. And I have seen the draw at like $1.90. So you do wonder, like, yeah, what level of collusion is that? Like, if the scores are level with 15 to go, just neither team's going to take any risk. And I've literally seen it as blatant. I can't remember if it was a World Cup or like in a European game where one team will just pass it back and forth in the back and the other team won't do anything. And that I guess that brings up the integrity of the whole sport and stuff, but that's a tough one. But I think if it's known going in that those teams could benefit in that way, you could argue that people have a right to kind of bet on that result. And also the bookies, should understand that. But you talk about, I guess, information too, which is not really match fixing, but it's like information that obviously isn't widely available. And that example where you guys, got whacked on the Warriors because people must have known that Joey was out. Like nowadays, is that better, like more transparent? Like if you do cop a lot of bets on a side because a key player is out or something nowadays, before that information is publicly available and then it turns out a day later or whatever, or a few hours later, oh yeah, now I can see why that money came. Do you report that anywhere? Like does the NRL, if we stick to rugby league, like does the NRL surely have some strict rules about players wouldn't be allowed to tell their housemate, like I'm not playing this weekend or Caelan Pong is out this weekend or something? Do you know much about the rules around the information?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on the rules, but I know for a fact that the NRL is right onto it, and the AFL, they're so concerned about the integrity of their game. They don't want news getting leaked before they're able to release it to their official channel. So we've had many instances. Can we see your ledger between 12:10 and 12:30 and see what bets were placed when the market started to move? Like you can sort of see when you're looking at trends and you see a line go from 4 to 5.5 and you say, well, or 4 to 6 or 6.5, and then an hour later, Caelan Ponga happens to pull out. Like it's something that they do look into, and then they'll investigate it, and they'll make sure they'll see if there's any link customers and these sort of things. So they do a really, really good job in that. And I think this year or the last few years, it's been so good in terms of how that's been so transparent from the punter's point of view. Like, I know we had a good chat there in the last week of the regular season when there was a lot of players that maybe weren't going to play, maybe, because it's a different thing as well. Like if coaches are playing ducks and drakes to put players in a side to give their team a better chance or to throw off the opposition, it's not betting related. And it's in there entirely within their rights to do so. It's when they put a team up, I suppose, knowing that player X isn't going to play, and telling people about it back the other side is the area that needs to be pulled up. And I don't see any of those issues. Like, I know we spoke about the game a couple of years ago when the Dragons are playing the Storm and the market moved significantly because we put up the wrong odds, or the bookies collectively put up the wrong odds, where it was always likely that they weren't going to play all their players. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. There's no malice from either side in a betting sense. It's just the bookmakers got it wrong. So, yeah, it's trying to distinguish between the two. And as you say, with that soccer scenario, like, if they are playing, I remember I was over at the World Cup when the Socceroos had to play Peru, and the two other sides in our pool needed to play out a draw to go through. And you're sitting there as a fan knowing that it's highly likely the other two sides are going to play a very defensively orientated game, and they did. And that's in their interest. It's not from a betting point of view that they're trying to profit. It's trying to get their nation into the next round of a World Cup. So it's something when it's something completely unexpected that it needs to be investigated. It's not as though when, logically, you can understand why it occurs. But, yeah, as you say, there's collusion. There's trying to get the information out in an appropriate manner. And I just think the way things have evolved over the last 5 or 10 years has been so good in that sense. And it's just been having the transparent amount of information, I think, is so good. And I think the last thing you want as a regulator as well is a fan of your sport having a bet and leaving with a bad taste in their mouth because of something that's out of their control and something that their perception is that the league could have done something differently to stop it.
Yeah, the player information one is interesting because we understand like key players do affect the odds, and definitely if there's mass changes. At the same time, it is in a coach's interest for the opponent to not necessarily know exactly what lineup or which players he's going to deploy. So that's where the league kind of in the NRL, they implement rules like you got to name your 1 to 17 on a Tuesday, but you can have the four reserves and stuff. So there definitely can be advantages gained by people and by punters. That example you gave with the Storm, Craig Bellamy openly said it in a radio interview on Tuesday morning that he wouldn't be naming a lot of guys. People got wind of that and started betting Tuesday morning, because I'm pretty sure if you recall that plunge and that big line shift really occurred before the team actually came out. It kind of just became widespread. So, but yeah, unless Craig Bellamy's kind of saying that secretly to somebody, I'm not going to be naming anybody, and then the word gets out kind of, in the shadows, and then people are betting it, that's where it becomes wrong. But even like just listening to interviews with players or with coaches and stuff, and reporters will ask, how's this player looking with their injury? You can sometimes get a little bit of insight just in terms of how confident they sound on if a player's going to play. But you've always got to keep that in mind, that it may not be in that coach's interest for everybody to know for sure. So it's fine if there's uncertainty, because the uncertainty is priced into the market as well. We can go through some other examples. You mentioned cricket and maybe the difference. You used the term spot fixing. Would that apply in examples where cricketers have been caught doing the wrong thing, where it's not a whole side throwing a match, it's specific elements of a match? You mentioned some Pakistani cricketers implicated. The famous South African test captain, Hansie Cronje, was also caught. Do you have memories of that? Did you take any bets that were actually affected in those scenarios?
Yeah, so for us, like, they're a different scenario where that it's not necessarily the game that's being involved. Now, if you're betting on a particular player and he's a prominent player, obviously the performance of that one player is going to have a significant bearing on the outcome of the game. But the spot-fixing ones that we were talking about, which involved the three Pakistani players, Muhammad Amir, Salman Butt, and I can't remember the other player, but they basically end up getting suspended, some of them for life, and Amir got... He got a few years. I think he ended up going to jail for it as well. And that was over, I believe, some no balls or to him to concede so many runs in a particular over. And it was the captain passing the message down. And they're the things that we didn't get caught up in that in any shape or form, because we don't bet on those markets. We don't bet on if there's going to be a no ball on this ball. And I think a lot of like a... You know, in reality, if you're a bookmaker and you're taking significant bets on a player to... bowl of no ball on a particular ball, like
it almost could have been live betting, and it could have been like a signal, like the next ball's going to be a no ball, and then people would be betting next ball outcome.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I think the vast majority of it occurred on the illegal side of bookmaking, but it was, you know, again, it was probably a case of a few bets that then flowed into the regulated market, and you know, it was an obvious one where blokes bowled a no ball by many inches. And you know, they're the ones that I'm like. It might not seem a lot to people in the context of a game. One person bowling a no ball, how does that affect, you know, the average person? But when someone's going to do, or someone's instructing someone in their team to do the wrong thing, it can start small like that. It can lead into other situations. The Anzi Cronier scenario, where, you know, I think he was involved in, you know, to score more or less the next number of runs. And you know, like if you get out for 30 when you can't get over 33, like he could have gone on and you know, scored 100 and won the game by himself, and he didn't. So they're the things that I think, as we're betting more and more on these individual type markets, I think it's so important that, you know, we've got to the point now in the marketplace where there are a lot more options, because it's great. Like if you're getting a truckload of money, like if you're betting on, you know, player X, for example, and his average is 25.5, and you've got the line at, say, 25.5, for argument's sake, then you should get close to close to money each way on it. Like maybe he's out of form, or maybe the conditions don't suit and there's a bias towards the overs and the unders. But you can sort of tell if something's up, that market will get back from evens into, you know, $1.40, $1.30. And then you know that there's something just not right in that scenario. So, but by the same token, all this spot fixing now, like I think it does get blown a little bit out of proportion in the mainstream market, because we our limits on the exotics are 1/50th of what a main market is. So I think that's why the importance, and you know, I know it's probably never going to be likely that it gets legalized over in India, but that's where I think the paramount or the biggest drama is that these massive wagers getting placed with your Indian bookmakers that maybe then flow back into the marketplace. And it's not good in that sense, because so much of the worldwide wagering occurs off the radar.
Like kind of like black market.
Black market. India. And
with their population, and yeah, and now, I mean, there's a population over 1 billion, but there's still, I think, over 100 million, like really living really affluently as well. So you can imagine that the sheer volume, and cricket being a religion too, would be by far and away the number one event that's being bet on. That's got to be crazy in terms of the amount of money that could exchange hands. So like to give an example with cricket then as well, it's like, like a player could be told, you know, they're going to be paid, you know, under the counter to score less than 30 runs or whatever. And if you watch the game and a player scored less than 30, you wouldn't blink. But as you said, as a bookie, if all you took was unders bets all day, and goes back to like people who don't usually bet that, but they're having their max stake they can have on a player under 30, then you would watch that innings really closely. And you'd be like, you know, is he... Yeah, he's going to be subtle, but does it look like he's kind of throwing his wicket away? Or especially once he gets, you know, in the 20s, like, was he playing differently? So that's where, you know, all that information combined, you can often figure out what happened. You gave us a real life tennis example. So the only other thing I wanted to touch on with tennis, what I've been interested in, is it would be a very easy sport to fix. And I think it probably has been over the years. There's been like a lot of, you know, dark organizations that have gotten a few players in their pocket, and especially because you can bet on, you know, not even the highest level, so they could get, you know, secondary tier players. So what I used to wonder was like, all you have to do is get a player who should be a favorite in a game, and and then like tell them that they're, you know, they're not allowed to win the game or whatever, and then get the money on the underdog wherever you can. And then if that player, the player wouldn't even need to fake it by hitting a bunch of unforced errors. They could just retire injured or hurt, because that used to be a loss. So that actually was that's why the rule has changed in the last few years, isn't it? Do you remember how that changing of how you used to result tennis matches?
Yeah, so it's a funny one, because the rules changed a couple of times over the last while. So basically the rule used to be that a player, I can't remember what it was at the outset, but then it changed, the match must run to completion for bets to stand. And that was, I think, Kafelnikov. It wasn't anything betting related in my view. I could be wrong, but it was in the Davis Cup and he was blowing up about the potato patch of the turf he was playing on. And I think he pulled out when it was 6-love, 5-2, he was going to get beaten. So that match, the bookmakers determined that we need to change this, which the rule has now come back to around the world now, where if one set's been played, the match is deemed a real life match, and then you pay out on the back of that. Because you could get players where they could have a free hit where it could go the other way.
I was thinking that as well. Yeah, yeah. You could tell a bloke, we're going to absolutely load up on you this game. Just go out and try and win. Well, if a bloke goes out and tries to win, it's not going to look suspicious at all. But if they said to him, but if you're not about, like if you're about to lose, you must retire hurt, and we'll get, you know, if that's resulted as a push or a void, then that's what you're talking about. That's a free swing.
I think that's where the whole industry has changed, because I think these real blatant ones are probably starting to disappear. But something like that where, yeah, as you say, someone, you know, I'll give you a cut if you go out there and win this game, and they're already going out there to win it anyway. But if they get to 5-2 down in the final set and they pull out, no one's going to think anything ill of it. But that bet was never a chance of losing. And I think that, and the conversely, the punters on the other side were never a chance of winning their bet. So I think the rule now is at its fairest, where as long as one, because if someone does, like, because the other thing that there's a lot of betting plunges in tennis is if you know what a guy's done his hammy and he's just going out there to collect his check, to go, you know, like I think there's a difference in the pay if they actually take the court to if they get walked over. So they can go out there. I see it often in the early rounds of the hard court tournaments, the US Open, where the clay courters go out there to collect their first round prize money. They've got an injury, they're never a chance of winning, and they'll retire 3-1 down. So that market is void, and rightfully so, because they don't get to the first set. Whereas if they battle on and they pull out, you know, two sets to one down, then you know, like the person on the player that had the good lead, I think deserve to be paid. So I think the rule's right. It's changed a lot, and as you say, like things change when these sort of items get brought up. Yeah, you think through, and we're certainly trying to make sure the rules are fairest in all occasions. And you're never gonna, if you're going out there to exploit the rules, you can find loopholes, but it's trying to sort of shut it down. Like you might have a, you know, in a best of three game, go out there, and if you're down in the first set and you're not going to win that first set, then again pull out, because we do get our money back. So you're never going to get the perfect scenario, but when players start to do the same thing over and over again, you do sort of get clued into it. So there has been a number of rule changes over the years. Like in Australia now, you can't bet on the first ball of the match in cricket. So that was obviously one of the big spot fixing concerns, where the first ball, you know, people were saying about Harmison when he bowled that wide down in the Ashes that day. There's no way in the world that was a fix. It was someone that had a lot of nerves that just sprayed one. But the perception is there, and especially when it is compounded by, you know, some other stories that get brought out with that Pakistan sort of situation. So you'll see a lot of rules that will change from time to time, which could be a case of trying to figure out a way to deter people that are potentially doing the wrong thing. And we're certainly always on the lookout for things we can do better, because at the end of the day, it's not just about trying to protect us, it's trying to protect our genuine customers, to make sure when you're having a bet, you're never going into a bet where you've got no chance of winning. And that's the thing that makes people leave the betting industry. They leave with such a bad taste, I don't want to be involved in this anymore. And you can't have that. You need to make sure there's fairness in anything you do from both sides of the fence.
Yeah, it's hard enough to win betting as it is without seeing an event where you just feel like, oh, geez, I never had a chance in that. We can do more quick hitters. I mean, we mentioned point shaving. So like in the example in the documentary I watched recently was the college basketball, and the way that they infiltrated that was they took sides that were clear, big favorites, you know, double digit line favorites, got in on a couple of the key players. The thing about obviously the reasons why they got in on it, because these were college athletes making no money. So they threw, you know, some money at these guys. It was pretty easy to influence them. And of course in basketball, only five players on the court, and especially a couple of, you know, star players, have a huge impact on, you know, how a game goes. And they told these guys, you don't even have to lose. You just can't win by, you know, more than that greater score. So, you know, you're not going to affect your team, really. You're not going to hurt your team. You're going to make kind of free money. And then that would cause massive line moves and stuff like that. Again, if you didn't know that the fix was in, you might be thinking you're getting great value, you know, taking the favorite, laying a much smaller line. But the Donaghy one's really interesting too. I believe that was like kind of in the 2000s in the NBA. And from what I understand, he was a referee having a big influence on results, particularly totals, kind of because he could decide, because it's really subjective and in terms of what's a foul and what's not. You know, there's contact, but what's a foul? And if he called it really strict and there's lots more fouls, then it's going to lead to lots more free throws, lots more stoppages, less time, you know, in possessions, and therefore higher scoring games. And I heard that professional punters lost a lot of money in that era because they thought they were seeing value, you know, opposing these big moves, because they didn't know why the odds were the way they were, because, you know, on face value, it shouldn't have been. But it goes to any sport. Let's say, an official is trying to influence a result or whatever. Again, you can always follow the money. If there's irregular betting, people are soon going to see the trend of which games it was. If it's all the same official, then you're going to look closer at like what the decisions were that were being made and stuff. I mean, one other thing about like leaked information. So we did touch a bit on like kind of players being in or out. There was an example, and that's why now I think the leagues are really strict on not letting any of their own players bet, just for the optics of it as well. But I remember there was an AFL player who told his mum, he's usually a defensive player, but he was going to be full forward or whatever. And then she had money on him for, you know, first goal score or something like that. So that's, maybe you can give an example of where kind of news has been given out that wasn't fully publicly known that affected any betting markets.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like sometimes the argument people have with that is, oh, well, he's backing him to go well. Like I think the perception.
Yeah, there's no fix obviously in that. Yeah, that's more just like info being leaked. Yeah.
Yeah. So the perception is that if someone does poorly, that's match fixing. Whereas if someone positively performs, you know, and sometimes I'm of that viewpoint as well. Well, like they're performing at their best. You know, maybe it should not be as severe a penalty, but I also, the optics of it, as you say, are so important. Because
an NRL player, it shouldn't bet on himself to score first try. Mm. Even though if he did, you know, you could argue that, well, he's not hurting anybody because he should be. But, you know, I always think they could get into a 2-on-1 and then try not to pass or something because they want to score, their mates are on him for first try or something like that.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I think there was a game that Warriors against the Dragons maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even longer. I'm getting old, so I can't remember how time flies. But the Dragons were over in New Zealand, and they were massive underdogs in this game. And it was, you know, end of the season, and I think they all chucked in $50 or $100 on themselves to win this game at $8. And then I can't remember if they won or they got beat, but there was all this story about it. And I think they ended up copping a fine, or they told their mates, or they did whatever. And I was sort of sitting back going, I don't mind that. But then what you're saying is, why aren't they doing this on every game? Why are they picking this one game out? So then the perception is, when they're not backing themselves, are they not trying? Like, and that's the optics of it. And it's when this information gets leaked, like same as a jockey in a horse race. Like the interesting thing with horse racing is the jockeys cannot bet. So they can't back themselves. You know, I know Ollie got fined or he got rubbed out for having a bet. J-Mac's been rubbed out for having a bet. And the perception is, why can't jockeys back themselves? Well, if they're going to back 6 out of their 7 rides on a given day and they don't back themselves on that seventh, does that mean that horse has got none? And then the interesting thing is that trainers can bet. So you've got trainers that are effectively, you know, trying to get their horse up that they can back their own runner. So it's a really interesting sort of dynamic. I think it's one of those ones where maybe if they actually nominated and they put down what, you know, we have backed these runners, but I think it just gets too messy, and I think it just takes any grey area out of it. And I like, you know, it's also the optics. Oh, you can go and tell your mum, or you can go and tell your roommate you're going to back yourself here. And so I think, again, horse racing and jockeys and AFL players and rugby league players, they're so well educated in this space now, and it's gone beyond. There's so many chats at the start of the season or in a racing carnival that we know what our obligations are. We know that we can't do anything that, you know, like I know one of the Collingwood players, I think, threw a multi on and he had to kick a goal or kick 2.5 goals or something. And it was only a $5 or $10 bet, and they made an example out of him and he got suspended for a number of games. And you look at it, you're like, well, it's not really hurting anyone there, but it's the start of something, and it's the optics. And this league, these leagues in Australia, there's so much money involved in them. You can't afford to have someone that starts off having a couple of little bets. You've got to set an example. And I think that's what's changing. And that's why we're in a country where I feel we're in the best spot we've ever been for all this side of it. We've had a great chat today, and I've been through the dark old days, and I remember sort of, you know, you'd sit down and you'd shudder watching some of these matches, where now you can get beat or you might concede a late try, but I'm never ever sitting there saying, oh, that was dodgy.
Well, one last thing with like leaked information. The Bulldogs got caught cheating the salary cap in the early 2000s. The Storm got caught in the later 2000s. And there were seasons where points got taken away mid-season. Do you remember ever getting any bets like for Wooden Spoon? Because like there's been evolution. Like we talked before about certain bets, you know, bets are resulted differently in tennis. Now you don't allow certain bets on first ball in cricket. I know there's less bets. I don't even know if you take first scoring type like in rugby league. Do you still let people bet if there's a penalty goal first? Or
I think with rugby league now we bet first score, but we don't bet on the first scoring play. So yeah, there has been
changes. Yeah, so there's been changes. But do you recall those ones? So I was going to say now it's like it's usually written as least wins,
yep,
rather than Wooden Spoon to protect from a team, you know, losing a bunch of points. But do you remember those specific examples?
Yeah.
Or any others that come to mind where information was leaked? Another one would have been the Dally M Awards a year or two ago, information leaked that Bellamy won best coach and stuff like that. So again, it's not fixed, but it's big bets coming in because they knew something the rest of the market didn't.
Yeah, and I think the obvious one that comes to mind was the Bulldogs when they got their points taken off them, and then Sonny Bill fled to France, and when that news was all breaking, I remember we were laying them at 50-1. We laid them at 50-1. We laid them at $26. We laid them at $10. We laid them at $5.
It's a team that's top of the ladder, or you know, up there. That's really no chance of finishing with the Wooden Spoon. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, odds would be crazy.
That was a crazy one, and yeah, like it was probably that was one that we bet too big in at the time when that was all happening. Again, that's not match fixing. It's just information being leaked, and you're right. The rules have changed on the back of that. That caused a key move where the market went from Wooden Spoon to least regular season wins. And I think that's right as well, because you can only imagine the people that were on the team that were going to run last that didn't, and they're not getting paid out. So that's another typical example of rules that have changed. And yeah, the Melbourne Storm one, I think that one was never really as, I think that one we didn't get much activity because I think you could sort of smell what was potentially happening there. And I think we might have suspended all the betting before much occurred because you could sort of sense that there was something that was about to break. But the Bulldogs one, we certainly got whacked. And then when Sonny Bill disappeared off over to France, you knew it was all sort of coming home to roost. And that was one of those ones, as you say, when the rules have changed, probably for the better, and for the better for both sides as well.
I've noticed though that like you can even bet on like lower league soccer matches in Australia and probably other sports too, like lower tier, where like I know people that play in, you know, like these regional competitions, and then some of them don't make any money, or they're making a couple $100 in match payments, or at most a few thousand a season. So I guess people would wonder what stops like a bunch of blokes that all play for a local sports team, but they're in the top division, but it's still like a local, whatever, Brisbane competition. And they see, hey, our opponent's $5 this weekend. And I mean, on Top Sport, you'll let everyone bet to win 500. Like if a bunch of people all got on for that, like what's kind of stopping people doing that?
Yeah, well, I'd imagine when these players enter into agreements, even though they are minor leagues, that they'd be entering into agreements with their club and that league to uphold the integrity. To take it one step back, there was table tennis was very prevalent in COVID, and that's obviously a very minor sport. And there's a case going on at the moment for a player that was betting, a punter in Australia that was betting on games that were made out to be fixed. And there's a big case going on about it at the moment. So he's, I don't know what it's finished up at. Like we've paid him the money and there's nothing we can do about that. But I think he's going to end up with a stint in jail. And I'd imagine, you know, from a lower league, like as you say, I've got mates that play in those leagues as well. But if they're ever found to do anything untoward, there's severe ramifications. Even, you know, the upside of the financial upside, I don't think is anywhere near enough to. And from our point of view, where you say someone's at a big bet with another bookmaker on a Chilean league 3-all, like if these bookmakers are letting punters on for massive numbers, then, you know, I don't have any sympathy.
They're playing with fire, basically.
Yeah, they're playing with fire, and especially when, you know, we feel we are the fairest in the marketplace. If we are betting on these weaker leagues and we are prepared to take everyone to win 500, and if a game goes from $1.90 and we lay it, you know, someone wanting a big bet, we'll bet them to win 500 because we know there's something a bit dodgy, then we'll go into $1.80 and we'll lay it again. Then after you lay it twice, and you'll put the shutters right up, and we'll never get sort of stung in that sense. And then that's when the regulators or the Soccer Australia will look at it, because they're monitoring all this as well. The last thing they want is for these things to come out. So, you know, from our point of view, if there was ever a fix in a minor league, like the most someone could win off us, and we feel we are the fairest, would be 1,000 or 2,000, which is not worth jeopardising their careers or their like livelihood post it, because if it comes out to be, you know, fixed, then particularly in Australia, there can be severe ramifications for those players.
Like potentially like criminal? Do you know of that? Like, okay, yeah. So there is like, there's more to lose than there is to gain. Correct. And that's where you're protected by like the fact that the limits are like the lower you get, the easier in theory it would be to fix, but also the less money you can really get on those events anyway. That's been awesome talking about all this. It was a really interesting topic that we had set for this season. So I think we've covered a lot of ground, a lot of, you know, real life examples. I said at the top, like this would be a really interesting discussion for any sports or racing fans just to talk about. And it's been fascinating to hear from your perspective and kind of real life examples as well. So I really appreciate you sharing the listeners of Wild World of Punting. Thanks again to Tristan. I hope you guys found that as interesting as I did. If you have any more questions about the stories we discussed or anything else on the topic, Tristan's a pretty open book, so feel free to drop a comment on Facebook, on the YouTube video, ask anything you like. Plus, in general, I really appreciate the feedback that you guys share. This type of show that we've created, the Wide World of Punting, I know that only is appealing to, you know, a portion of the Tripod community. To me, it's still well worth it to have this opportunity to have these in-depth punting conversations and bring this show to you each week. But the truth is, the amount of engagement and positive feedback that we get literally factors in to how many episodes we're going to create this summer. So I've got a couple of awesome guests lined up, as well as a lot more great topics that I want to deep dive with Tristan. So you can definitely expect a couple more episodes coming out each week leading up to Christmas. But after that, that's where it comes down to us assessing how this is going and what we can and what I'm going to do. So if you do like Wild World of Punting episodes, please drop us a like, a comment, tip your mates off, anyone who might find it interesting, especially since we've deliberately made these episodes to not be dated, so anybody can jump into any episode they're interested in, audio, video, anytime you like. Enough about that. I don't like asking for any favors. If you're here watching or listening right now, I appreciate you. So let's finish up talking Wild World Bet of the Week. And firstly, a heads up or an update for those riding the random AF multi, which was the tip shared in episode 1, 5 legs, 5 sports. But that included a boxing leg. And that boxing bout is now off, unfortunately. Tommy Fury has withdrawn. I was backing Paul in that one. And if you recall, we actually got the opportunity to make it available for people to back either one of those fighters. But regardless, that leg's out. But I suppose luckily we did consider that there's always that possibility in the fight game. So we've already set up the stipulation that the multi would be alive regardless that leg is a push or a void. And we'd already agreed that the 4 other remaining legs would work out to be a $5 shot. So, you know, if you think if you backed Paul, you had 13-1 on the random AF, but Paul was $2.60 to beat Fury. So that brings it back to a $5 multi, 4 legs. But of those 4 legs, Man City's already won Group A of the Champions League. Patriots are making the playoffs. Not mathematically yet, but I'm calling it. Like, they're definitely making the playoffs. I think they sit top of the conference right now. We just need them to be top seven. The Ashes started today looking good. So far, so good. And the Ashes, Australia to win the series, was already the shortest leg of the multi. So it just leaves the Brooklyn Nets to have a player to score 40-plus in a game in 2021. It hasn't happened yet. In fact, last week, Durant had 39 in a game, so that was a bit of a tease. But look, there's been 8 of the 20 games so far, still another 12 to go. Plenty of time, good fun to follow, and fun is what it's all about. So especially if we can find some value, which I think I have here. So we really have gone wide around the world for this week's custom play. Two sports I don't follow, to be totally frank, motor racing and MMA. So I'm not going to sit here give expert reasoning, but I am going to be able to tell you that I know my bet is good value based on the market, and it's going to give you interest in a couple of big events. The bet is the finishing position of Max Verstappen in the Formula One Abu Dhabi to be smaller than the number of total rounds fought between Poirier and Oliveira in UFC 269 on Sunday. The odds are $2.25, the max stake $200. So for example, Verstappen is a clear second favorite behind just Hamilton in the Formula One. Let's say he comes in second. Then we would need that fight to at least start round three, to go beyond two rounds. So note that wording where the finishing position needs to be a smaller number than the number of rounds that get contested in the fight. If it's an equal number, that is a loss. So for a little bit more context, odds-wise, Verstappen's $1.30 to finish top three. The fight is about $1.50 to finish within three rounds. So the odds are in Verstappen's favor, but we're getting this underdog price because we would lose in the event of a tie. But I think it is something different, something fun, and I do enjoy the ability to get creative with these and have a punt on sports I know nothing about sometimes, but without feeling like I'm throwing away money, because I'm able to really dive into the markets and figure out what odds, you know, we should be getting and negotiate a really good price for our followers with TopSport. So thanks to them for having the balls to always take us on with these. They never knock back really any suggestions, no matter how creative we get. And if you do need a TopSport account, of course, use that code TRYPOD, TRYPOD. And feel free to reach out to me afterwards if you do. Good luck if you jump on this one. We're still looking for our first win, but I mean, in fairness, two of the three plays have been multis, which is still pending. And then the one play that lost, $3.50 loss and a heartbreaker. Maybe we get that W this week, so good luck. Shout out to Nettie and the Prop Me Up Boys as well for weekly NFL tips that they've been providing. That's exclusively on Facebook, on the Tripod Facebook page and the group. And these guys have been heating up in recent weeks if you do follow the NFL and you're interested in that. But whatever you do, whatever you punt on this week, do it responsibly. Have a good one and leg off.